This poem. This poem is about a woman's search for Emunah and Petachim, and it's dedicated to our Rabbi Wallerstein. When Hashem answered, tonight a weeping woman was rocked in Hashem's tender arms. Tonight she ceased her weeping. Tonight a pleading mother was heard by a merciful God. Yes, she was. Yes, she was. So stop your wandering disbelief and cast your eyes to heaven. And Hashem, with love and sweetness, will answer you, his child.
Thank you, Chama.
Thank you.
Wow. Nancy's getting better and better. You're going to write a special poem for Hanukkah, right?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for giving me
I put it together with my mother's latkes sometimes.
And thank you for listening, everybody.
You don't understand that they're listening right now. How many people there is? It looks like there's 50, there are 56 people online, but they're not 50. But there are not 56 people online because there are 56 sites, right, where they're in Dallas and in Toronto and all over the place that are listening. And they're always like, well, Wallerstein, why don't you say the poem and let Nancy give the shiur? We have to try that once. That might happen one day.
He's the speaker in there. It's his
friend. Oh, okay. I do know a couple of poems, but I don't think I could say them. So, all right. It's like Miss Lucy had a steamboat. Oh, no, somewhere else. The kid in the kid in the bathtub, right? Somewhere like that. Okay. All right. Parshas VaYishlach. We're going to say the Refuah Shleimah first. Then we're going to talk about Parshas VaYishlach. I promise not to do to you, Lee Nether. I'm going to say Refuah. I'll put it off. I'm not going to do to you what I did last night to my boys. I spoke for 2 hours straight. Without a break. And then I woke them all up. I was pretty amazing last night. Pretty amazing. Okay. We're going to talk about some deep thoughts tonight. Mitzvah Hashem. Bezrat Hashem. I don't normally do this, but I'm going to tell you. But I came through last time, so next week on Wednesday night I won't be here. I'll be in California, and I'll tell you why. And then Thursday night, I'd like to say hello to Toronto, Mitzvah Hashem. First time, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, and Monday I'll be in Toronto next week. Why am I doing this? Why am I running all over the country? I never did this to you before. I will explain to you tonight why. I'm in California, and I'm in Toronto. And I try not to be anywhere on Wednesday, but this trip came out on a Wednesday. But last time I wasn't here, Charlie Harari was here. And everybody enjoyed it. So Mitzvah Hashem, I'll ask him to come back. Okay. Vayishlach. Let me just say the Refuah Shleimah is very, very fast. First of all, two announcements. Meet the Shatchan. Now, I just have to tell everybody here that one of the complaints that I got over the years is Rabbi Wallerstein, really more from the boys than from the girls. Rabbi Wallerstein, you have all these girls in Ornava, and you don't read Shiduchim. And we have like 3,500 women registered in Ornava, and there's many, many single women of every age. And we really, the one thing I think we haven't tackled correctly is Shiduchim. So we went out and we hired actually two new shadchanim, a young lady, and hired them, and Tuvia Hansen, and we have Judy Bodner and Lisa Elephant. So we have really four shadchanim. The problem is that every time we make a meet the shadchan, none of the girls show up. So on one side I'm being told that you don't do enough for shiduchim. On the other time, every time we make meet the shadchan, six girls show up out of three and a half, how many single girls are in Ornava? Probably about 1,200. So out of 1,200, we have three girls that show up. So I'm doing now what I can do, but you got to show up. Because if you show up, we can make a shidduch. And I think everybody wants a shidduch. So December 19th at 7:30 p.m., we're having Meet the Shadchan. Okay? So you need to email shadchan.ornava.com to reserve a spot, or just call. Call Abivit or call 1718. It's very easy. O-H-R-N-A-A-V. And just speak to one of the girls and tell them that you want. It's not a belittling thing where you come here and you feel like you're on sale. It's our own people that are meeting you. So we're trying to do it in the nicest way, and we're thinking of doing all types of different. I was on the phone with Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky tonight on what Ornava is allowed to do and what we're not allowed to do as far as making shiduchim nights where there are boys, maybe giving a shir and there's boys and girls. And we asked all kinds of shaylos tonight. We know we do everything according to halacha. We were told that we cannot make a singles weekend in a hotel. He paskin that I cannot do that, even though some other people do. But Rav Shmuel feels that that's not. For some reason, I always felt that wasn't comfortable in the same hotel. So he said we can't do that. But he did say there are many other ideas and something called eight candles, which are eight seats, which people invite four girls and four boys to the Shabbos meal. And that's one way of meeting. And then you switch to lunch, whatever. There's many ways of making shidduchim in a very nice, halakha, holy way. And that's the only way that Rabbi Wallerstein and Ornava will allow it to happen. But we want to work on it. But if the girls don't register and you don't want to be part of it, then we can't find your other half. So please, please, December 19th at 7:30 p.m. Here in Ornava. Right, we have a wedding gown gemach. So we got your wedding gown, you got your hall. Right, here you go, you got your hall. I'll sing Baruch Haba. Right. So what else do you need? You need a guy, so help us out. That's it. Okay. I'm very serious. We're trying. You know, like, we tried this past month to Shabbos Sababa so that the girls would have a place to come and go dancing, and 13 people showed up. Sababa came from very far away. We paid a lot of money, and we figured on Motzi Shabbos, girls have a place to go that's kosher. They can go dance, do whatever they want, and 13 people showed up. So we're trying. You guys, some, you people have to react. All right. Anyway, a lot of good things happening. We don't have that much time to talk about it. But the Ornava, we're not going to say Ornava, but the Ornava model is opening up all over the place. Manchester opened up this week officially. There were 65 women. And when I asked how did it go, right, Rabbi YY spoke, when I asked how did it go, so the lady said it was very interesting with an English accent. She used a different word. I forgot what it was. But she said, it was a mixture of people, older, younger, from different backgrounds. I'm like, yeah, Ornava. Because they thought they would be like the same girls from the same school. So I'm also flying to London, Emirat Hashem, at the end of January. And London is opening up an Ornava. It's called Ura. So I think what they decided is it's going to be Ura London and Ura Manchester. So they're opening up. California is very close. Toronto, Emirat Hashem. Getting a lot of emails, St. Louis, all over the place, where they want to do what we did over here. So my dream was to make a Sarah Schneer made schools, and my dream was to make a Ornava after school program, night program for women, and it's mamish spreading across the world. So Eretz Yisrael is interested. So Baruch Hashem, if you do it, you have to do it for the right reasons, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps. All right, we're learning, we're pushing them as Asfir Basmanya, Yaakov Ben Yudasha. Of course, I spoke last week about my boy, right? I spoke about Moshe Gervell. I did speak about Moshe Gervell last week?
No.
I didn't? I didn't speak here last week about Moshe Gervell?
No.
Really? Okay. I spoke about Dina last week, right?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't speak about Moshe Gervell. Okay. Well, every shiur for the rest of the year will be Le'ili Nishmas Moshe Matisyahu Ben Chaim. His name is Moshe Gervell, who passed away 2 weeks ago. I will open my shir telling you, well, it has a lot to do with my shir tonight. We'll talk about Moshe Gervell, all of a shalom. So if you have him on your list, it was Rafal Moshe Matisyahu, right? So now he can be on the list, Ilei Nishmas. Before Shlomo for Mayor, Ben Jamie, Avram Yishai, Ben Aviva, Ruchama Chava, Bela, Bas, Ritzachana, Chana, Tehila, Bas, Chana, Rav Chaim, Ben Chassi, Miriam, Avram Moshe, Mordechai, Ben Sarah, Bela, Rav Chaim, Chassi, Miriam, again, okay, Rav Agoyin, Yosef, Shalom, Ben Mushka, Ben Chava Mushka, Nechama Bas, what's his last name?
Sarah,
Nechama Bas, Sarah. Harav Agoyin, Yosef Shalom, Mechavim Moshe, yeah. Who is that? It's Rabbi Yashiv. Mechayim Moshe, okay. He's Baruch Hashem, he's better, but this is something new, or?
Oh, no.
Oh, no, still it's fine, but he's better. Esther Bas Leah, Simcha Bas Esther, Chana Bas Rachel, Eliza Chaya Bas Sar, he's weak, but he's better. Sar Freda, Elisheva, Bas Tavor Maki, he's still right, please turn. Ruvain Ben Tavachaya, Sphere of Fall, Ben Leachasi. I'm not that tired, I'm tired. Chana Basari Menu, Chitzara Basara, Rafal Yaakov Ben Sila, Frumet Etta, you should write it for 120 years. Frumet Etta Bas Esther Rivka, Rachelka Bas Mayasha Rivka, Chana Bas Mazal, Moshihuda Ben Batsheva Sara, Yehuda Ben Chai Sara, Shmuel Yosef Ben Estabela, Sharatavi Bas Miriam, Shmuel Yosef Ben Estabela, Ramosh Yitzchak Ben Cyril. Moshe Eliezer ben Miriam, Dina bas Edel, Bela bas Malka, Chana Basha bas Sarinessel, Tavatuvia bas Sara, Nechami Dabba bas Sarinessel, Menachem bas Rachel, Chana bas Sara, Menachem bas Sara, and anyone else who needs to refer Shalema, Liza, Shalama bat Rachel Hilda, Dorit bat Geula, Leah bat Ira, Clara bat Haya, Sara bat Nechama, Nechama bat Sara, Moshe ben Rina, Avraham ben Sara, Ina bat Rivka, Yilat bat Sara, Rachelina bat Luba, Shimon Yosef ben Nara, Rufol ben Nara, Kfegi bat Miriam, Eva bat Miriam, Rufol ben Ugol, Shalom bat Rachel Tamar, Rachel bat Idol, Sara bat Hena, and Shulamit bat Zulaya, and everyone who needs a refuah shalem. Rabbi Wallerstein, thank you, and Shabbat Shalom. Okay, did I say this already? Moshe Eliezer ben Miriam, Dina bat Edel, Bela bat Malka, Chana Basha bat Shri Rezal, Tavituvi bat Sara, Nechama Dabi bat Sara Nessel, Menachem bat Rachel, Chana Basara, Nechama Basara, anyone else who needs a refuah shlema. Okay. And one more announcement. Rabbi Morgenstern from Eretz Yisrael this Monday at 8 p.m. in Eretz Hashem. We're trying. We're bringing you whatever we can. All right. I'm supposed to announce the Shabbaton, but we're having Eretz Hashem, a beautiful Shabbaton, Shabbat Chanukah, but it is 100% sold out. So we mamish don't have a bed or room. We even took the hotel across the street, and we don't have a bed or room. But I have a feeling that Avivit like has these couple of rooms on the side for like the people who call the last second. But we really, really sold out. So I'm announcing it, but I don't know that there's any room left. But in Mitzvah Hashem, there'll be another Shabbaton in our girl Shabbaton, which will be probably at the end of February. In Mitzvah Hashem. Okay, they're probably screaming at me like, oh, why'd you announce that? But that's the truth. And whoever's Mitzvah Shem signed up, I hope we'll have a great time. And whoever isn't, there's always one room. You know, there's always one chair left. So don't wait, Dallas. Hi, Dallas. Don't wait. Call them now. Okay. And Toronto, I'd like to announce in Toronto, whoever's watching in Toronto, that Mitzvah Shem Rabbi Wallerstein will be speaking a week from this coming Sunday night. I have no idea where, but somewhere in Toronto. I don't know the name of the shul. Okay. So this week's parasha, Yaakov sent malachim. He sent angels or regular people, messengers, to Esav. And he says, he davens to Hashem. A year of Yaakov Ma'od, he's very, very scared, right? And he says to Hashem, first he says, Katayti mikolach hasadim. He says, I'm not asking you don't owe me anything, Hashem. It's always important to daven to tell Hashem that you don't owe me anything, because if you daven that Hashem owes you something, then when he gives it to you, then he takes away your schusim. So we always ask, when we ask for something, we ask that it should be chesed. And he says the following, Hatzileni na miyad ochi miyad Esav. Save me from the hands of my brother, the hands of Esav. Ki yore anoichi oisei. I'm very scared of him. Pen yavoi vihikani eim albanim. Because he has the power to kill me and aim the mothers and bonim, which means he has the power to uproot Yiddishkeit. He has the power to rip out Yiddishkeit, Judaism. So the question is, he says, Hatzileni na miyad achi. Esav. Now, we all know that Esav was Yaakov's brother. So why didn't he just say, Hasleini na, miyad Esav? And if he wanted to tell us that he's a brother, it should say, Hatzleni no miyad Esav achi, save me from Esav, my brother. Not my brother Esav. So what's going on over here? So before I get to that, I had a discussion with a young lady this week about the next world. And I've had this discussion many, many times. I think it's very important that we talk about this. And this was like a lot of my share last night. In fact, today I had a boy in my office, which I told him a little bit from last night's share. It really blew him away. And I want to prove to you that there's another world. Without even going into Torah proofs. So some people believe in this world because you're here. But not everyone is 100% there's an Olam Haba. Even though you're told and you believe in it and you hope there's a Gan Eden, you hope the Gehenna part isn't true, but the Gan Eden part is true, right? But a person, until you see Hashem, right, it says nothing's bigger than Re'iyah. I know there's Hashem, I feel there's Hashem, there's different levels in Emunah, of course, but until you see Hashem, it's like there's this 100th, if you're a tzaddik, this 100th of a doubt that maybe this whole thing is like made up. Let's be honest with ourselves. We believe it. We want to believe it. We're brought up that way. But deep, 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 deep down, when something goes really, 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 really wrong, you're like, I believe in you, Hashem, but deep down in your heart, there's this 1%. So it's brought down in a sefer, I think it's called the Gesher HaChaim. It's brought down that the best moment and the worst moment for a human being is the second that he dies. Why? Because if you did everything you were supposed to your whole life, and it says that when a person dies, he sees the Shekhinah, then you're like, there really is a God. Baruch Hashem, my whole life, I gave up Facebook. I haven't said that word in a long time. I gave up all the Yetzirahs in this world. I wanted to dress differently, but I got dressed sneistic because I'm a Jewish girl, and I didn't eat lobster, and I didn't eat all these unkosher things, right? I didn't eat Cracker Jacks before they became kosher. Right? I didn't eat all these things, and I really behaved myself because I believed in Hashem, and there is a Hashem. So it's a confirmation on your belief. You're like the happiest thing in the world. It's all true. Truth is fulfilling in greatness. But the person who lived their life and did everything wrong, they're like, uh-oh, there is a Hashem. So that moment when you meet God, when a person leaves this world, depending on how you lived your life, is either the most amazing moment or the most frightening moment. So, there's many questions that I've been asked over the years, and I've spoken to totally not religious, what's the word that they use? Nothing to do with Yiddishkeit. What's the word? Unaffiliated. Totally unaffiliated Jews. Who mamish, if you say, and Hashem, you know, the whole speech, I once spoke a whole speech, and I said, and Hashem, at the end, a lady came up to me and said, who's Hashem? Well, you know, he said a whole story about Hashem, like, who's Hashem? So totally unaffiliated. They don't know who David HaMelech is. They don't know anything. So many times, they're like, you know, they never learned about Olam Haba and Bitachon and that God created the world. So they're asking for proofs. Like, how do I know I have a soul? You know, we talk about soul. So the only time they know that they have a soul is when they fall in love and they can say, I met my soulmate, right? All of a sudden, they have a soul. Until then, they don't have a soul. But, oh, I met my soulmate. Okay, that's English, stupidity, whatever it is. So how does a person know they have a soul? So right now, every single person in this room and everybody watching this year and every human being on the world is actually living in two worlds, not in one. We're all living in two worlds. Do you know that? You're a poet. You know that. We live in two worlds. What are these two worlds that we're living in right now? Each person in this room. Anyone know?
And there's one present day world.
There's one girl in the room that cannot answer this question. She's not allowed to, and she knows who she is. Now, what two worlds are we living in? What?
The spiritual and the material.
It's the same world. We're living, every one of us is living in two, well, you're right, but we have to explain a little bit what you're saying. Every person in this room is living right now, this second, in two worlds. And the world that you don't know you're living in is much more powerful than the world you're living in, and you know that that world exists. Oh, come on.
Our potential. President.
Potential, don't say that word. It's on the back of my report card every time. It triggers. Your son has potential, but what's happening? He's not reaching it, whatever. I'm like, just right, I'm stupid, and I have no brains, and you don't expect anything. And then my parents would go to Toys R Us and buy me something. They wrote in big letters, he has potential, but he doesn't live up to it. So that word potential, like, now I got to go to therapy for like 2 months again. You brought it back. But yeah, there's a world of potential, but that's, you're not living in that world. It's not a different world. So now I'm going to, and this is my proof of neshama. Okay, to people who never learned a word of Torah in their life. And that is the world of emotions. Every single person in this room has emotions, sad, happy. I have no idea what's going on inside, what's going on right now inside you. You could smile at me, you could hate me. You could have a sour face and you could think the greatest things. The facial features that a person puts on their face has nothing to do with their emotions. There are some really good fakers out there that are showing one emotion and really they're having another emotion. So every person in this room right now, right now has emotions. Sometimes they're mixed emotions. Sometimes they're crazy, powerful emotions. Sometimes they're so painful, there's nowhere to escape. Now, let me prove to you that that world is more powerful than the physical world. Now, we all live in that world. Can you see emotions? No. Everyone here agrees you can't see emotions. You can't.
No.
I have no idea. If you could see emotions, you probably couldn't live. If you would walk into a room of this many people and I could see everyone's emotions, I would either break down and cry, I'd be jumping up. It would be so much coming at me at one time that I wouldn't be able to handle it. So Hashem made us that we don't know another person's emotions. So now, I said to these people, so you know that you're actually living in a world, and at the same time that you're living in the physical world, there's an emotional world, another world that is with you that you cannot see. You cannot measure emotions. MRI, you know, if you want to know somebody, Mom, I don't really believe you love me. Let's take an MRI and see if you love me. MRI is not going to show anything. Right? CAT scan is not going to show anything. Sonogram is not going to show anything. X-ray is not going to show anything. There is nothing physical in this world that can measure an emotion. Now, there's a halacha, hamalbim p'nei chavero b'rabim. If you embarrass another person in public, ein lo chelek lo'olam haba. No matter how many mitzvahs you did in your life, if you embarrass another person in public, you do not have a chelek in olam haba. Why? What did I do to them? So I embarrassed them. It's not something that you can see. I don't even know that I embarrassed you because you're a tough girl. And I just embarrassed you in public and you're laughing because some people laugh when they get embarrassed. Or you're in class and the teacher says something and you're embarrassed and you laugh. So what I do to you? So what I do to you? That doesn't say that if I hit somebody and I punch somebody, ein lo chelek l'olam haba. It says you're a Rasha. Because I embarrass somebody, something you cannot even see? And the answer is that the Gemara says that when you embarrass somebody, it's like killing them. Talking about I embarrassed her, and after I embarrassed her, she went and had a slice of pizza and some soda, and she went on a date, and she got engaged, and she got married, and she has kids and a family. Where did I kill her? But Chazal say, if you embarrass somebody in public, you don't have a chelik. It's worse than killing somebody. Because killing somebody, you get a chet olam haba, you kill somebody, and they're witnesses, so you get one of the four deaths of Beis Din, of court, and they kill you. But if you embarrass somebody, you're dunsky. Why? And the answer is very scary. The answer is that the world of emotions never go away. The physical world goes away. When a person dies, so the physical body dies, and it rots, and the maggots take care of it, and it's really not important. It's just like putting a car in a junkyard. Because the person is not the body. The person is the neshama. And the neshama is the emotions. And therefore, if you kill a body, so your body gets killed. But if you kill a soul, if you embarrass a person, which means that you're embarrassing them in public, so you're killing a soul, you're killing someone's emotions, the next world is a world of emotions. What happens to your emotions when a person dies? Where do they go? Where do they go? The person we see is in earth. What happened to all those feelings of that person's whole life? Where do they go? You think all the feelings are gone? All those feelings of pain and happiness and sadness is gone because the physical body is gone? The emotions have nothing to do with the physical body. Because you're tall doesn't mean you have more emotions. Because your heart is bigger or smaller doesn't mean you have more emotions. Because you're an adult doesn't mean you have more emotions. You can hurt a kid's feeling at 6 years old, right? You can hurt them emotionally, destroy them, that for the rest of their life you can't fix them.
That's right.
Has nothing to do with age. Because emotions is a soul, and the soul can be 1,000 years old, even in a 2-year-old kid. So all of us are living right now in two worlds. So how could you not believe that there's another world when you are actually living in that other world? I didn't tell you any big chazal and Rabbi Dessler. I didn't tell you anything, you know, that you have to break your head. You're living. Every girl knows when she's hurt or when she's happy. You know what that pain. Emotional pain is much worse than physical pain. Physical pain goes away. Emotional pain, you got it's crazy work. And if there's a trigger, it comes back. Because it never goes away. So if you punch somebody and you gave him a big black and blue, and the black and blue goes away, and then you talk about, remember 10 years ago when I punched you, the black and blue comes back? No, it healed, it's gone. But if you hurt somebody emotionally, and you remind that person of the story, the exact pain that they had 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago comes back, and sometimes tenfold. So that world is a much stronger, much more powerful world. And that's the world that a person goes to after they leave this world. Rabbi Lamb got up and he gave a speech. I forgot the sefer that he quoted. The scariest thing I ever heard. And he said, you know what Gehenna, you know what hell is? In the next world, since I apologize to everyone here because it's going to hurt a little bit. And maybe that's why it says that it's impossible to go to the next world, even if you're a big tzaddik, without spending some time in Gehenna. Why? Because in the next world, it's a world of emotions, which means that you're an emotional being, which means that if you hurt somebody, you can't feel another person's pain. That's baloney. I feel your pain. I'm with you in your pain. It's very nice. I see you're in pain and it bothers me, so it hurts me. But you can't feel my pain because you're not me. You could understand my pain if you went through the same thing. But you can't feel my pain. Just like if you punch me I'm sorry, I mamish feel that you're hurt. Sure, you feel that I'm hurt. You don't feel that I'm hurt. Your arm doesn't hurt you because my arm hurts you. You feel inside, I'm sorry that I did that, but your arm doesn't hurt you. So when you hurt somebody else's neshama, you can say, I feel your pain. You don't feel their pain. You feel that they're in pain. Trey Lamb said that when you come to the next world, there's no body. So you can't hide. When I heard this shiur from him, I walked out shaking. Here you can hide from another person's what you did to them. You leave, you put your earphones on, you don't hear them. In the next world, in the world of emotions, there's nowhere to hide. So if you hurt somebody, then that pain is forever. Then they put you in a room of that person's pain. Forever. So you're in this room and you're feeling the real, because you're a neshama now, and that's a neshama. You're in that room, and that crazy pain when you embarrass that person, you're feeling. Says the Mishnah, when you embarrass someone in public, they're in so much pain. No matter how much good you did in that room, when you're in their pain, you can't have Olam Haba no matter what you did. You're in a crazy room of screaming pain. Wow. Wow. That other world is much scarier than this world. The emotional world. And Chas V'Shalom, anyone who's ever gone through emotional abuse will tell you that it's much worse than physical abuse. Because the emotions is the person's neshama, and a neshama can never be destroyed, and a neshama, you can't put your fingers in a neshama's ears. And he said, Rabbi Lam, Kavad Esavicha V'Esimecha, L'mayin Yerichin Yemecha, in the next world. He said, imagine when you make your parents feel good. So that feeling good that your mother or father has because of what you did, in the next world, they put you in that feeling. Imagine being in the opposite side. When you help somebody, and that love and that enjoyment and that happiness of that person, which you cannot feel in this world. You could see it if someone smiles, but you don't really see it. Is the most unbelievable thing to live in somebody else's emotional happiness that you caused. That's Gan Eden. And to live and somebody's pain that you caused, that's Gehenna. So there's no question, outside of Musar Torah, there's no question that if you look at the way Hashem created us, that there's another world. You can't deny there's another world, because you're living in that world. And it means so much to you. Emotions? Emotions control your life. Your body doesn't control your life. Your emotions control your body. Your body doesn't control your emotions. Your emotions control your body. Because the neshama, of course, is much more powerful than the body. So there's no shiloh, there's no question. You don't have to get up and be the biggest talmid chacham in the world to say that there's another world. Of course there's another world. Because when the body dies, all that's left is emotion. Is that neshama. And I can actually tell you that I saw this with my own eyes. When my father passed away, so I was the only one in the room. And I had just taken off his tefillin. He was in a coma. I had just taken off his tefillin. I put on his tefillin. I just took off his tefillin. And I was winding it up in the bag. And the nurse that was sitting there said, Mr. Wallace, you better come to the bed now. I think we're losing him. And I went to the bed. And my father looked like he was sleeping. And then he took one last breath. He was mamish in my hands. And he took one last breath, and when he took that last breath, something left him. He was in my hands. Something left my father's body. I felt it. And I saw. I'm not going to tell you I saw a light, or I just saw. And then when I looked at my father, it wasn't him anymore. It was the same face, the same person, but it wasn't him anymore. The emotion is a person's life, and when that leaves, it's just a body. It was a nechama to me. Instead of freaking out, just the opposite. Everyone else freaked out. I didn't freak out because I understood that my father went to the next world because I saw it. I'm not, you know, Rabbi Wasser doesn't make up stories. I saw. So I saw the person that was in the bed was the car. And the car, we left the car here. I said, Dad, after 120 or Mashiach, we'll see you. I actually saw that his emotions left his body and went to the next world. So there's no shiloh, there's no question. We are living in this two worlds. And of course, a person who is emotionally healthy lives a different life than a person who is not emotionally healthy. That is the neshama. So there's no question that every single person was created, every single person, not only Jews, but we all, the whole world has this. Jews have it on a different level, but Everybody has this. Hashem said, I created you in my image. So that's amazing. So there's no shaila about another world. But the question is, and this is really why I'm traveling the world, the question that we asked a few weeks ago, and that is, what does it mean to be a Jew? And I've been going around to schools, and principals are like, Rabbi Wallerstein, we don't really need you in our school. You know, our girls are not on Facebook, and our girls don't talk to boys, and our girls don't listen to Geisha music, and, you know, we don't have, for some reason, Wallerstein's name is like, together with problems for some reason, and, you know, we don't need you to talk in our school. Meanwhile, little to the principal's knowledge, from his school, I'm getting 80 emails a week, help me stop listening to Geisha music, talking to boys, and being on my phone, okay? But I can't tell them that, because if I tell them that, and all of a sudden they're going to do the whole spy network thing and try to figure out who I'm talking about. So I said, I'm not coming to talk about Facebook. I'm not coming to talk about boys. I'm not talking about drinking. I'm not coming to talk about sneers. You got nothing to worry about. You got that all. You got that down. You got the best school like everyone has. You have the everyone. I said, I'm coming to talk about God. Oh, about tshuva. We know where our girls are from FFBs. They're from homes. They don't need you to talk about God. You know, that's for the, you know, the Baal Tshuvas. I'm like, really? Come with me to the 12th grade. You're the principal. Come, let's sit in the 12th grade and talk to your girls. And you sit next to me, so I'm not going to say anything you have to worry about. And let's ask them a question, what it means to be a Jew. What is Judaism? And we went through this, right? And we get the whole thing, this, that, you know, it's a religion, and it's laws, and it's all these things that, you know, my parents, I really don't know, some girls say, and whatever it is. And this guy's like, what? 12 years in yeshiva? And they, and you know, like, and he's waiting for me to answer, because he don't know the answer. So then when I get into the whole life thing, that Judaism and Yiddishkeit is life, and it's mamish life. And I spoke this week in Long Island, and I said, I want to tell you a story, what it means that Yiddishkeit is life. And it is life, and davening is life. And the question of, when was the last time you talked to Hashem? And everyone in 12th grade said to me, what do you mean? We talk to Hashem all the time. We daven, and then we say Tehillim. I'm like, yeah, when was the last time you talked to Hashem? And they're like, we daven, and we say Tehillim. And now, of course, when you daven, you add saying Talamat to Levracha, right, since two nights ago. So everyone answers the same thing. I talk to Hashem every day. I'm like, you do, and you have to daven. And davening was written by Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, and it has a crazy power. It has an unbelievable power. But when was the last time Chana Miriam, there's no Chana Miriam here, I hope, because she thinks I'm talking to her. When was the last time you talked to Hashem? What do you mean? I'm like, how do I explain this? So this girl's going out on a 10th date. She goes downstairs to get something, and she sees that in the room, the door is a little open, that there's chantilly cakes and all kinds of cakes and all kinds of chocolate platters. And she's like, and he told me, the boy told me to dress very fancy. We're going to a fancy restaurant. He's proposing. And my mother hid the whole l'chaim. But of course, I'm going to make believe I don't know, because I'm not going to blow this, right? But she's all excited because she realizes that it's her l'chaim that night, and he's going to propose. And he comes, you know, us guys, you know, we're going to fool you. You don't know the night we're going to propose, you know. Get dressed fancy. Make sure you do your hair real good. Like, he never said that before, you know what I'm saying? And he's all dressed like he never got dressed. Okay, can't figure it out, right? So they go out on this date, and he's got it all planned because that's the big thing, you know? I say, guys, they spend so much time on planning how to propose to a girl, but they don't spend any time on planning how to be married to a woman. Spend a lot of time on the proposal, but the other part, and the same thing with the limo. Ooh, it's a big thing with the limo. My talmidim, I'm like, yeah, it's really nice at the wedding. You got the big limo. Every wedding you go to, there's a big limo, and all the girls' friends are standing there, and they look at it, and it's like unbelievable. Right? That limo, usually the friends pay for it. That's like the shtick right now. The friends pay for the limo, and they're all excited. They get bigger and bigger and bigger, right? And I just saw Rolls Royce the last time I was there. They want to show, right? And the girl gets into the limo, and they're all excited and everything. My tummy, them, I'm like, This means nothing. 20 years later, tell me how many times you had your wife picked up in a limo. Or how many times you told your wife, I'll meet you there, take a car service. Sure, in front of everybody, the night you get married, there's a big fat limo. It's not what life's about. Life's not about the proposal. Life's about staying married. Not getting married. Staying married. That's what life's about. Anybody can get married. And to stay married, sometimes it's work. Yeah, and you have to work. And that's part of marriage. And people don't seem to get that. So she's all excited. She knows what's going down. And he's all excited because he has pulled off the most amazing proposal. Now, don't get angry. I hate telling these stories because the guy's going to propose. It's going to be one of those, you know, in the soup, the letters, the alphabet letters, say, will you marry me? And you're like, oh, I think I'll just eat these and make believe I didn't see them. You know, like, so Rabbi Wallerstein said a story about a guy. Why can't you be like that guy? Okay, so let's not. I'm not going to tell you the whole story. But anyway, he came up with this unbelievable thing. And he says to her, you know, there's so much fresh air right here. I think we should go for a walk. She's like, yeah, sure. Right? On the beach. On the boardwalk, on the beach. And all of a sudden they're walking. And he says, oh my gosh, what's going on over there? There's this huge candle in the sand. He got this all figured out with his friends. He got all his friends, you know, they set it up. They have to, the friends are always set up, which I feel is extremely not sneeze. Don't have your friends set up your proposal. First of all, your friends are usually single that do it, and it hurts. And it hurts. And people are not sensitive to that. You're having your friend set up a proposal. Meanwhile, the guy went out with 900 girls, and he's not engaged, and he's the guy you're telling him to set it up. Just do it yourself. Or get someone who's married to do it. Anyway, he says to her, behold! A little poetic. Behold! There's a candle in the sand! I wonder what's going on? Let us go look. So, they go to the candle in the sand. And there's just a candle in the middle of the beach on the sand. And he's like, I don't understand. What's this candle for? And you see in the sand, isn't this cute? He writes in the sand, will you marry me? With a heart and a box. And says yes, and it says no. And she's all excited because this is like the moment in her life that she's waiting for. And he gets down on one knee, which I don't think is very Jewish, but whatever. He gets down on one knee. Usually guys do that because they're scared you might take a swing at him. That way you won't hit him. But, and he does the following. She's standing there. You know, her eyes are all like, wow. Candle, sand. Psh. Guys, whoever's watching this. Okay. And he gets down on his one knee and he looks up at her with his big eyes and he says, hold on a second. And he takes out a card. She thinks he's going to give it to her. No, he opens it up. And he goes, okay, you are very special. I cannot believe that he bought one of the Hallmark cards that don't run. I cannot believe that I could live this long without you. She's like, you're proposing from a card? You put out you have a candle and sand and a beach and the right setting and the right mood and the right everything and you don't have your own words? I don't think you're the right guy for me. If you can't express your emotions, I don't know if this is going to work. And meanwhile, he's erasing behind him the box that says no, right? And he's scratching in the side like, a box that says, maybe, please, you know, something like that. How much more insulted could you be? The night of proposal, you're reading it from a card? So, there's a HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we'll talk about. And there's davening, and davening has a very big koyach. And Shachris Mincha Maariv have an unbelievable koyach. But there's also a time of day and a time in your life where you got to talk to Hashem from your heart, not read it from a book. Where you got to tell him, I love you in your own words. Where you got to propose in your own words. And tell him how special he is in your own words. And tell him what you're going through in your own words. and the pain that you're having in your own words. Because he wants to hear your own words. Rachel Imenu knew how to express her emotions. And she told Hashem what she felt. She didn't say Tehillim. She said what I feel. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Rachel Mevaka al Boneha. She's crying. She's crying from her own words, from her own heart, from her own emotions. Rachel Mevaka al Boneha. Then 100% I'll listen to what she has to say. Not that if you daven, Hashem won't listen. Davening is very, 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 very important. But you need to open up your heart. You're proposing. You're talking to him emotionally. He made us emotional beings. Why did he give us a soul? He didn't give an animal a soul. Why did he give us this soul? Why did he give us this emotion? It's painful sometimes to be hurt. It's always painful to be hurt. Emotions can destroy you. Can destroy your guf. Your emotions can cause you to hurt your own body. That's how powerful they are. They're crazy powerful. So why did he give us this? And the answer is, so that you can love him. Because without emotions, you can't love him. You can read text, but you can't love him. Every once in a while, you don't go to shul in the morning. Every once in a while, I'm a little meshuggah. I'm not saying everyone has to be meshuggah like me. But every once in a while, when I have these kids who are telling me they don't believe in God or whatever they're doing, after I finish chakras, I'll go up to the pareches, to the curtain by the Ar HaKodesh, and I'll bury my head in it. And I'll say, Hashem, I feel bad for you that you have this job of being God. What a terrible job. I would never, ever take that job. All day long, all people do is complain about you. They talk about what you didn't do. They talk about all the young kids that pass away and all the people that pass away. And all those people that complain. I don't understand God. This one has cancer and that one has cancer and this one passed away and that one passed away. And where's Hashem? And how could you believe in a God? Someone told me this week. How can you believe in a God that causes so much pain? Well, that's a good question. I said, you really, really want to know how come, or first answer the question, did you ever go to a hospital and go on the maternity floor and look behind the glass at all the new babies that came into the world? How come nobody says to Hashem, you're amazing, look at these little miracles? We only talk about the levayas. We only talk about the death. Nobody's interested in going to see all the little babies and their mothers and their happiness. Nobody's running to weddings. You're trying to figure out that you can write, sorry, I have a previous engagement with my television or my book. Nobody's running to weddings because if you ran to weddings, imagine if all day long you ran to weddings and maternity floors. You'd have to say, you're amazing, God. A child created from nothing, from a putrid, rotten drop, and you have this little baby, complete with eyes and ears, complete, ready to live for 90 years, 100 years, or however long they're going to live, being able to see and hear and feel and taste. Amazing! Nobody, all the people that complain about God, not one of them ever took a tour in a maternity ward. And how many people spend time in the botanical gardens to see the flowers that Hashem created? Oh, today it's raining and pouring. 2 days in a row, how can you do this? Meanwhile, the flowers are all clapping the whole day today. They're having a good time. So I put my head in the pareches and I said, Hashem, I apologize for all the human beings that don't stop kvetching because you do so much good and they don't know you. So, you know what? Not for me, not for anyone else, for you. Bring Mashiach. Enough of this stupidity and garbage. Enough of people walking around and saying you don't exist. Come on, Hashem. And Hashem's like, they got to find me. They got to find me. If I'm going to just show myself, then what do I do? What's the greatness of the human being? The greatness of the human being is being able to connect, being able to look, and being able to find Hashem in any situation. which brings me to talk about a young boy that died 2 weeks ago, a week or a few days after his 20th birthday. So Hashem gave me this chus about a year ago. I got a phone call from Ellie Rowe, who was very close to this boy, a Hatzalah member in Queens. He said, "Zach, it's 2 o'clock in the morning." So the rule is with me, if I'm sleeping, my phone's on silent. You can't wake me up because it's on silent. So if I answer, that means I'm up anyway. He says, "Zach, want to go for a ride to Muncie?" I'm like, "Ellie, it's 2 o'clock in the morning." He goes, "I know. There's a guy. There's a kid, Moishe Gervell. He has 50 tumors. He's in crazy pain. You got all your stories. Come on. He doesn't sleep anyway. He can't sleep. Let's go. Let's go up and you tell a good story. Tell him a joke." I'm like, "Hey, good story for me anytime. Let's go." So I got dressed or whatever it was, and I drove up 3:05. 3:05, we got to the house. So Ellie says, "Zachariah, you go into the room by yourself first." And, you know, and I never, you know, as much kiruv and everything else I do, I'm not a Camp Simcha guy. I wish I was, but I never had the time to really, you know, get involved with kids with cancer. I went, I told them a story once, but I'm not a Camp Simcha guy. So for me, it was a little traumatic. And I walk into this room and it's dark. And there's this little teeny light under this kid's blanket. He's facing the wall. He's 19. He's maybe 80 pounds, 60 pounds, I don't know. Not much. There's not much there. And he's scratching himself and he's facing the wall. And there's this little light under his blanket. So I pull up a chair and I sit down and I'm like, "Moishe Gervell, my name is Rabbi Wallerstein. Did you ever hear of me?" So he turns around, he looks at me, and in his very quiet voice says, "I once heard one of your tapes. New, did you like it?" This kid had the biggest smile. He says, "Yeah, I liked it." I said, "Moishe, what are you watching?" You know, I figured he was watching a DVD or something. He said, "Watching? What are you talking about?" He says, "Rabbi Wallerstein, you want to learn with me?" And he pulls over the blanket. There's this teeny little like pencil light and a sefer, and he's learning. And at that moment, I felt like, "You are Wallerstein a zero." Kid is in so much pain that you can't turn the lights on in his room because from the chemo and radiation, his eyes are that sensitive. So he's laying in a bed at 3 o'clock in the morning, scratching himself to pieces, and he's not paying, and he's learning. I was like, I am nothing. And Baruch Hashem, Hashem gave me this chus to spend 9 months with this boy and to visit him very often. We went, we bought him a fish tank, whatever it is. Now I want to tell you about Moishe Gervell. He's a regular guy. This is not Moshe Rabbeinu, and this is not Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and this is not Rav Moshe Feinstein. This is a 19-year-old boy who was born in Israel. He's a regular boy. So there was a very big tzaddik in my house about 2.5 months ago, Rav Shimon Galai, big tzaddik, big makubal, very holy man. And we figured, you know, we knew that what Moishe had is incurable. And that was no question. It's one of those one in a million cancers. And not only is it incurable, it's crazy painful. So he's on morphine all the time. And the only thing this boy wanted was either to learn or to buy svarim. You bought him svarim. He went to a svarim store. It was like a candy store. In fact, when he was in Memorial, the Make-A-Wish Foundation, which is a non-Jewish foundation, when they met him, so they said, "Whatever you want," that's what they do, "whatever you want, make a wish, and we'll make it come true." It's a non-Jewish foundation. And usually the wish is, "Take me to Disneyland." They're always famous for that. You want to know, whatever you want, it's only for pretty terminal cancer cases where they know. So whatever you want a plane ride, you want to jump out of a plane, whatever you want, we'll do. So he says to these goyim, these non-Jews, right, in Memorial, suffering, he says, "I always dreamt of having my own shas." Shas are the Talmud, the books of Talmud. "These are goyim, your own what?" He said, "Shas." He said, "We never heard of that. What is that?" He says, "I'll write it down for you, and when you on the way out, you can go to the rabbi and show it to him, and I want this certain shas." It's a certain shas. It has all the rishayim, achrayim, whatever, leather bound. This was his dream, to have this shas. Okay, so you know, he told that to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. 2 weeks later, a truck drives up, the brand new shas. So from that time on, we knew that all Maishi wanted was, Baruch Hashem, like 2 weeks before he died, I bought him a Zayar, a set of Zayar, and he said, please learn it with me, and I learned a little bit with him, and as sick as he was, he was like in Shemayim. Anyway, we said, you know what, there are miracles. Maybe Rav Shimon Galai can do something. So what happened was, about 2 months ago, 2 months before he died, so one of the tumors hit his spine. And because it hit his spine, he had no feelings below his waist. And because he had no feelings below his waist, he didn't know that he had to go to the bathroom. And when he went to the bathroom, he wouldn't know. So therefore, he wasn't allowed to learn. Because you can't learn when you're not clean. So forget the cancer. The cancer didn't bother him. He dealt with it. But the not learning part, that he couldn't deal with. So we come to Rav Shimon Galai. Eli Rowe carries him in because he doesn't feel below his waist. And he puts him in a chair. I'm there. It's my house. And he puts him in a chair next to Rav Shimon Galai. He gives Rav Shimon Galai the name. Rav Shimon Galai looks at him. Of course, you don't have to be a genius to know exactly what's going on with this kid. And Rav Shimon puts a big smiley face. He says, "Nu, Maishi, what can I do for you? What tefillah? What do you want me to daven for?" So Maishi looks at Rav Shimon Galai. I was in the room. And he says, I know where I'm at. I know what the end of this is. He says, I just want you to daven to Hashem that as long as I live, that Hashem should give me back the feeling when I have to go to the bathroom so that I can learn. That's all I want. The living part, I know, I'm a kabbal, I accept it, but the part that I can't learn, I can't accept. Just daven for me that I should know, I should feel when I have to go to the bathroom. And Hashem Galai said, I will. Well, daven for you. He took his name. And Maishi was very sick, so they took him right out. And I watched a tzaddik sit in his chair and cry for 20 minutes uncontrollably. What a neshama, 20 years old. I'm not finished. So, it came before the summer, and it's Camp Simcha. He's already really, really sick. And he's like, I'm not going to camp. He can't get out of his bed, he can't do anything, but anyone who knows Eli Rowe is the guy who says, if it's tough, if it's hard, try hard. If it's impossible, try harder. That's where he comes from. There's no such thing as impossible. He says, Moshe, you're going to camp. Moshe says, I'm not going to camp. He says, Moshe, you are going to camp. He tells Moshe's mother, do his laundry, clean his stuff, and pack it up. He's going to camp. And Moshe says, I'm not going to camp. I can't go to camp. I can't move. I can't breathe. I'm in pain. And Ellie's like, you're going to camp? Tate picks him up, puts him in his car, puts the stuff in the car, and drives him up to Camp Simcha. Didn't give him any choice. And Baruch Hashem, they gave him those 2 weeks, were amazing. Amazing. Amazing pictures. There's Rabbi Feiner. Etan Feiner. He speaks all over the place. Rabbi Feiner from the Five Towns. I think he's a Rav now, one of the shuls, the white shul, who has gone through his own situations in life. And he's the Rav of Camp Simcha for boys. And at the Levaya, he gets up, and he says, so this boy that's right here in front of us, Moshe Matasyahu, Kohen Gadol, Chashmanom, Chanukah, came over to me in camp one day, and he said, Rabbi, I need to ask you a shaila in halacha. He said, okay, what's your shaila? He says, I know that I'm wearing a diaper, it's a 20-year-old boy, and I know I'm not allowed to learn. But could I ask you a question? Am I allowed to think about Hashem? Am I allowed to think about how much I love Hashem? Or is thinking about loving Hashem considered learning or davening, and therefore I can't do it? You hear this? His question is, am I allowed to think about how much I love Hashem, or is that considered like learning, and therefore I'm not allowed to do it? That was his question in life. He's dying. He can't feel anything below his waist. He's 19 years old. He has every reason to be angry. All these people come and ask, they're angry to ask questions. How could Hashem do this to me? What kind of evil, mean, God do we have? He has every right to ask questions. And he's already paralyzed from his waist down. And his question to the rabbi is, can I love Hashem, or is that like davening and therefore I'm not allowed to do it? So Rabbi Feiner said, loving Hashem and thinking about Hashem is not considered learning. And you want to do that all day, Maishi, you can do it all day. He said, by Levaya, it's like you gave, like all the cancer left him. He was so happy. He was like, for the rest of camp, like another person. I can love Hashem! Even if I'm in a diaper, I can love Hashem! That was it. That's all he wanted. He was living in the emotional world of Hashem. His body was, forget about it. There was no body. But the power of a soul, the power of the emotion, connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The rest of camp, he was on fire, they said. Why? Because even though I'm wearing a diaper and I might be dirty, I can love Hashem. A week left to his life, and we knew it. Eli Roe, he had one more wish. There's a Sfarim store in Meir Sha'arim in Israel. And his thing was about going to Sfarim stores and buying Sfarim. Not televisions, not apples, not texts and phones. And, you know, some people, some kids get angry at me when they're very busy with their phones, and my mother didn't let me have a phone, and my mother let me let them think to myself, you fool. A phone? That's not life. A phone? That's not life. Moshe Gervell knew what life was. So we knew that he only had a week left, or the doctor said a week to 10 days. So Eli Roe decided, if my Moshe wants to go to Israel to this farm store, we're going. So he's more than a paramedic. He went with two other guys, doctors, medics, went on an El Al flight, took three rows, brought this kid in, pumping him with morphine, medicine, like you wouldn't believe it. Fly him to Israel, get him into a wheelchair, medicated to the moon. Get him to this store in Meir Sha'arim. And they wheel him through the store in Meir Sha'arim, and he's sitting there, and I could show you pictures. He's sitting there and you think that he's in Disney World. Smile across his face. He cannot feel the bottom of his body. Smile across his face. This safer. I was like, oh my God, he grew in 20 years. He's 1,000 years old. In 20 years, he reached a spot in spiritual world. I don't want to say the Gedolim are out there, but Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have 45 or 25 tumors. And he went to Eretz Yisrael. And they said they're there in Eretz Yisrael already. They had to put him back, get him back really fast. Then they take him to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, the Gadol Hador. So they go to the Gadol Hador, Rav Chaim Kanievsky. They figured, that's our last chance. He's, you know, he talks to Eliyahu HaNavi, whatever, he can do Nisim. And they bring Moshe into Rav Chaim. He can hardly speak anymore. And Rav Chaim looks at him, he gives him a bracha, whatever he is. And Moshe, I guess he leaned over, he could hardly whisper. And he says to Rav Chaim, this is the Gadol Hador, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, who just lost his wife. And Moshe says to him, Rav Chaim, you're the biggest in halacha. I don't have much time. Could you find me a heter that even though I might be dirty, that I can learn? Chaim Kanievsky said, I paskin lahalacha, you can learn. Even if you're dirty. It was like, I can learn. I can learn again. If Chaim paskins, nobody can say no. Can learn again? The happiest guy. Rav Chaim's gabbai goes over to Rav Chaim and says, Rosh Hashiva knows halachically you're not allowed to learn when you're soiled, when you're dirty. You're not allowed to learn. You can't bend that rule. How could you bend that rule? That's the law. You can't. You can't. When you go to the bathroom, you can't learn, right? So he asked Reb Chaim, he says, I don't understand. I understand pity and everything, but halacha doesn't work on pity. The laws are the laws. So Reb Chaim, they said this by the Levaya. So Reb Chaim, Kanievsky said, the reason that you're not allowed to learn or daven when you're dirty, because it's a bizui. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace to the Torah. It's a disgrace to the Torah. You're learning Torah and you have to go to the bathroom. That's why if you even feel you have to go to the bathroom, you're not allowed to daven. You have to go to the bathroom and clean yourself out. Because it's a disgrace to the Torah. If you feel like you have to go to the bathroom, then you should be learning. Surely if you went to the bathroom in a diaper, you're surely not allowed to learn. So he said to Reb Chaim, I don't understand. Reb Chaim said the following. He says, the reason you're not allowed to learn is because it's a bizui. It's an insult. It's a, I don't know the word to translate bizui. It's not respectful. Huh? Disgrace. It's like a disgrace to the Torah. Says the Gadol Hadar, says to his Gabbai, he says, that boy that just left here, it's an honor to the Torah if he learns it when he's dirty. It's an honor to the Torah. That boy learns Torah, doesn't matter whether he's dirty or he's clean. It cannot make a disgrace to the Torah. He is the Torah. Moshe Gervell, 20 years old, reached a level beyond anything that you can even dream of. So every shiur that I give for this year is l'zech nishmas this boy. So we see how powerful the other world that we live in can be. I'm not telling you a story about the Ari HaKadosh or the Baditch of a Rav or a Moshe Feinstein. I'm telling you a story about a boy in Muncie who was 20 years old, who lived in your generation, who's actually younger than most of the people in this room. He reached that level. So we all can. And this week's parsha, I'll end with this thought. He said, Hatzileni na miyad achi, miyad Esav. He said, save me from my brother. Because my brother is much more dangerous than Esav. And my brother can not only kill me, but he can kill Emal Banim. He can kill a whole household, a whole Jewish household, a mother and her children. So Hatzileni na miyad achi, save me from my brother. Second is Esav. What does that mean? That means that the things in our world that we think are friendly to us, those are the things that we have to be much more careful than the things we know are not. And that's why Klal Yisrael today is at a 60 or 80 or 70% assimilation. Because we're not living, we're not Chas v'Shalom in a concentration camp where we know that they hate us, that that Nazi hates me. We're living in a world where everyone loves us. We have freedom of religion. We have freedom of everything. We go to college. Everyone's good. Everything's great. We go to a think tank. Everyone loves you. So you're not ready for Esav, who's your brother. When he's Esav, you know. And we spoke about this. If a guy shows up in the street and he walks over to a girl on Avenue J and says, you get over here. I want to do an Avera with you. She's going to run for her life and she's going to call the cops. But if a guy walks over to a girl on Avenue J and says, I'm from Kansas. By the way, hi, Kansas is watching. And do you know anywhere there's a minion right now? And she's like, oh, Landau's, I happen to be walking that way anyway. You could follow me. And as he's walking with her across Coney Island Avenue, he says, and by the way, do you know was there any Sfarim store around here? And she says, well, after you dive in, if you want, I could show you that. Uh-oh. That's Esav. That's the friend. That's the guy that's good. That will destroy a home and a household and everything else. The internet and all the other stuff that it has good. It has good. Internet has good in it. And Facebook has good in it. And Goyish music makes me happy, Rabbi. It all has good in it. It's music. It's just music. Wrong. Esav's in there, but he's playing Achi. He's my brother. Last night I made a real rabbi joke. Achi is Achi. Ha. Rabbi joke. That's the danger. The danger is when it seems to be your friend. This week I went through a very traumatic story where a woman who was extremely vulnerable because she went through a lot, somebody that was supposed to help her, who she thought was her friend, because he wasn't dangerous, because it's what he does, he helps people, hurt her and did things against Hashem, the Torah, and everything that we stand for. And I actually saw this pasuk, Miyad Achi, Esav. My brother, the one I fought, that was my brother, that was my friend, that's the one that could hurt me the most. And not to quote Shakespeare, but he has one good line. And it's not beware the Ides of March. Et tu, Brute. You also, Brutus? I expected it from all the guys that were rebelling. But his best friend went behind him, took his sword out, and stabbed him through the back. And Caesar didn't say anything to the murderers and the assassins because he knew that he had to watch out for them. But he said, Et tu, Brute, you? My friend? You also? That's what Yaakov davened to Hashem. Save me from Achi, the acceptance of civilization and culture, and I'm in a cultured world, and what could go wrong here, and what's wrong with this? That's the thing that can kill Eim Albanim. That's the thing that can kill families. And Kachaya, that's what killed families. That's why there's such assimilation in America. I think it's more than 60%. Because Jews don't mind marrying non-Jews. Because they're our friends. Manishtana. They like me. We like them. So why not? And Yaakov knew this was going to happen. And he said, Eim Albanim. Because once a man, a Jewish man, marries a non-Jewish woman, there are no more Jewish children. At least from the Holocaust, somebody escaped. At least people escaped from the concentration camps, but from intermarriage, from a Jewish man marrying a non-Jewish woman, there is no escape. Every child is not Jewish anymore, and the grandchildren are not Jewish, and nobody's Jewish anymore. So I want to end. So it was a big fight, and in the fight, I had a lot to say. I have chidah. That's why it took me 2 hours, and I promised you I won't do that. But there was this big fight this week between Yaakov and the Malach, and the Malach, he asked the Malach, Mashmecha, what's your name? And he said, Lomaza Tishal, why are you asking me my name? Which sounds like the Malach was really Jewish, because we, you know, when you ask somebody, like, where are you from? They ask a Jewish person, they say, well, where are you from? We answer questions with questions. Jewish people do that. We do that very often. So, do you like the pizza? Do you like the food here? Well, do you like the food here? But I asked you, but no, but do you like the food here? So we do that a lot. We answer, but this Malach was Esav. So when Yaakov asked him, what's your name? He should have answered, I'm Malach. I'm the Satan. Instead, he said, why are you asking my name? What kind of answer is that? And it says, when the Malach realized ki lo yachaloi, that he couldn't beat him, where did he hit him? Where did he hit Yaakov? In his thigh. Actually, he hit him in his groin. Why did he hit him in his groin? Because he said, Yaakov, you I can't beat, but your children in 2011 and 12, them I'm going to beat. So he dislocated Yaakov's thigh, which represents a person's children. As we know from Avraham Avinu, he made Eliezer swear on his thigh, because that represents a person's children. So Esav knew that he could not hurt Yaakov, but he said, I will get your kids through all these machines and through all this assimilation. I will get, and he dislocated. Why dislocated? Dislocated is when you separate two things. So I said last night, and I think this is very, very important, if you take this alone from my shir tonight, it's like, really, really the most important thing. And that is, and we need to know that our children, even if you're a grandmother, your grandchildren, is the part of you that is godliness. Why? Because God lives forever. And a person, the only way, it's actually written by an English poet, the only way that you can live outside of your body in the world is through your child. Because your child is part of you. And there's a whole psychology thing. That's why when parents hold their children for the first time, they cry, because actually they're holding themselves. Because your child is part of you. So you're looking at yourself outside yourself. You don't get a chance ever to look at yourself outside yourself. And there's a whole thing in psychology that a child is you outside yourself, which causes all types of emotions, sometimes healthy, sometimes not healthy. Because if you're not healthy and your child, you're looking at your child, which is you, and you're dysfunctional on yourself, then you're going to be dysfunctional with your child. Because your child is actually, you're looking at you. And if you're not good, then he's not good. That's a whole psychology thing, whatever it is. But a child is you. Which means that you're walking around the world. Your kid is you, and you're walking around the world. And when that child has a child, you're still walking around the world. Because that's part of that child, which is part of you. Which means, till the end of time, you are walking around the world. You live forever through your children. Therefore, what are we doing? What are we doing? Chinuch, our children, the most important thing in the world, because it's you. It's you after you die. They're going to put you in the ground, but your kid's still here. You're still here. They're physically part of you. We know that. Or the DNA. Wow. The DNA of a person that he gets from his parents. Holy cow. If you learn, know anything about DNA, every little thing about you comes from your parents, your DNA, and your soul's DNA. And then that kid's DNA goes to the next kid. So you're living forever. And you're busy on the phone? And you're busy with your friends? When you are there and you're not giving it any attention? So I've been speaking about this, and I think I said it here, but I cannot say it enough times. I just got an invitation to a dinner from the high school that I went to. They're making a dinner. I get this invitation every year, and the head rabbi calls me up, Rabbi Wallerstein, we'd love to have you for the honoree, because I'm famous. That same rabbi threw me out of school twice and called me a sewer rat. Sewer rat, you know, with the long tail? Yeah, big one, big fat rat. Why? What did I do already? If I told you what I did, you'd laugh, because in those days, what I did, they caught me, I think, talking to a girl through a window. I don't know exactly what I did. I was a sewer rat, and I'm never going to be anything. Trauma, right? Bounced right off. So now, I would love to get up and be the honoree and repeat that story, but I don't have the heart to do that. But I go every year to the dinner and I tell him, well, I show him all the new stuff we did. We just opened the high school. Ha, ha, ha. I spoke in Manchester. Ha, ha, ha. And it's the best. You know why? Because he's like, goes over to everyone. He says, this is a product. You know Rabbi Wallerstein? He speaks all over the world. This is a product of our yeshiva. He's our product. And I'm like, 1 second, let me just put my tail away. You know? All of a sudden, I'm his product. You understand? So I want to take you back for a second to when he said that to me, and worse. I'm not even going to get up here and publicly tell you the pain and hurt that a man in that school did to me as a 16-year-old. Something that he